They just seem to be getting kicked out and trying to find a place to go, so we're just helping them out a little bit in that. They're getting ready to put together the hump forecast, and you know, with these fires and with these dry conditions, you know, the increased fire danger, and it's pretty hot and dry out there, so they're just preparing to report on that. Let's see, law enforcement. We do have a new officer, Lorraine Hardy, is now on. She's completed her training and is out full-time. They have been doing a check station up at the port of entry at Daniels Canyon, at the mouth of the canyon there, for the quagga mussel. So they have been having mandatory pullovers for people with boats or watercraft. Most of it is for education, but they are checking for quagga mussels. There have been begin to arrive citations for that as well, for the more serious offenders on that. But for the most part, they're cooperating. And finally, our outreach. I think most of you know Tanya Kiefer. You'll be sad to hear that she's leaving us out of our region. She's been hired as the outreach manager in the Northeast region out in Vernal. So she'll be leaving us on the 15th of August. So we'll hate to see her go. It's good she's staying with the agency, but she'll do well out in Vernal. We will be filling in behind her. With the hunt approaching, just a reminder again for dedicated hunters, there's a lot of projects out there online. Go check the web pages to look at those projects. Don't procrastinate on those. There are quite a few things that you're able to do out there. And of course, this first year on those, you don't need any hours, but your second and third, you need to start putting in your 16 hours each year. So I guess just an invitation to get those knocked out. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything else.
Okay, I need to back up just one little bit. Need to talk about the Wildlife Board and what went on at the last Wildlife Board meeting. Want to welcome John Mayer, the Wildlife Board Chairman of the Wildlife Board here, and he will make sure that what I say is correct. Right?
The you say it's got to be gospel. So.
It's a long time ago. Greg Sheehan talked a little bit about the Cutthroat Slam. Also introduced Rick Olson's new law enforcement chief, and then there was going to be a hide and antler auction coming up in May. And also talked about the Mexican wolf issue and their efforts in that regard. In connection with New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado. So anyway, then as far as the action items that took place, and hopefully I can read my own writing here. On the Bucks, Bulls, and OIL permit recommendations, many of you may already know this, but this information, but on the Manti, the motion was made to only increase that by 275, and that passed 5-1. Okay. The recommendation was 550. There was a motion to voted to reallocate the percentage of tags for the Pine Valley and Zion unit and do it in a 56-22-22. And I believe that passed, correct? Okay. Also, there was some discussion about the increase for elk youth tags, and that motion was voted down. There was a motion made to leave the Wasatch at the 2015 numbers. That resulted in a tie, and the chairman voted yes. So that passed. The balance of the recommendations were approved, and the vote was unanimous. On the analyst, it was accepted as presented. That was unanimous. The CWMU was also accepted as presented and voted on, and that was all unanimous. And the Hunter Ed changes that were, and the language was that was presented passed 4-1, one absent. The Anvil Pilot Agreement passed unanimously. And as mentioned, that the 12-year-old rule was something that was passed by the legislature. So that was why that was in place. I think that's pretty much it. To summarize that, let's go ahead and move on to the DWR information that needs to be voted on. I want to just remind you that you'll have 3 minutes as an individual to come and make a presentation or voice your opinion. And if you're representing a group, you'll have up to 5 minutes to do that. We just want to tell anyone that comes to the podium to express their opinion to do it in a respectful way and be respectful of everyone here. Everybody has a voice and an opinion, and they have a right to have that known. So let's just move on. The way we'll do this is the DWR make a presentation. Then we'll have questions from the RAC. Then we'll have questions from the public. And then we'll have move from that to public comments on the issue. And then the RAC, we'll bring it back to the RAC for their comments and any proposals, motions that they might have at that point. So with that being said, I think we can move on. And Leslie, you're up.
I'm going to apologize. Can you hear me? Okay. You guys are my first draft, so you get all my muddles.
While you're checking that, I failed to mention, if you have a comment or a question on the presentation, please grab a card and fill it out and get it up here so we can call you up.
The subject I'm presenting tonight is the fur bearer rule. The majority of what we are proposing in this is just clerical, so I won't comment on the clerical things, but I will comment on some of the things that will affect the rule that we did add or try to clarify. So our fur bearer rule is basically what regulates trapping of our fur-bearing species. In our rule, we have some definitions that were absent or missing that we have added. So I'll just go through those really quickly. So bait means any lure containing animal parts larger than 1 cubic inch, with the exception of white bleached bones with no hide or flesh attached. Previously, it also required that any bait put into a cubby set be 8 cubic inches. We felt that there was no need to define 8 cubic inches, and so that's what we removed out of that. We've added cage trap, which means any enclosure containing a one-way door triggered by a treadle or pam that prevents the escape of an animal after the door closes. The reason that we put cage trap in here is just to further define it. It was absent from this rule. Foothold trap means any underspring or jump trap, long spring trap, or coil spring trap with two smooth arms or jaws that come together when an animal steps on the pan in the center of the trap. previously before in the rule, every time it said any of the foothold traps, it listed them all. So we're just trying to put them all under one thing so we don't have to keep listing it. Good condition means the carcass is fresh or frozen and securely wrapped to prevent decomposition so that tissue remains suitable for analysis. We just want them in nice condition when they're brought in. Owner, previously in the rule, every time it talked about an owner, it had a really long definition of what an owner was. So we're just clarifying that an owner means the person who has been issued a trap registration number associated with one or more trapping devices, so that it doesn't have a long definition throughout the whole rule. Permanent tagging, the only thing that we're changing here, we are going to propose lengthening the season for bobcat trapping and marten trapping in our next presentation. In order to make that consistent, if you pass this or pass that amendment to the season, we will have to move the permanent tagging day to the second Friday in March. We're going to request that all of the trapping seasons for bobcat, marten, end March 1st. On marten trapping, before it required that the lower jaw be brought in addition to the skinned carcass, we're not going to require the lower jaw. We aren't currently using that for any data collection. So food harvesters will just be required to bring the skinned carcass intact and in good condition when brought in for permanent tagging. One of the things that we are clarifying in the rules that a person may not disturb or remove any trapping device except the landowner where a trap has been placed. If permission wasn't obtained, the landowner can go ahead and unset that trap, or the owner of a domestic pet that has been captured in a trap can take their own pet out of that trap. And then one other thing that we are adding into the rule, traps may be placed near the carcass of protected wildlife. Previously, this was prohibited, provided that the carcass is not moved or relocated for the purpose of trapping wildlife and the trap is not located within 30 feet of the carcass. And that's what I have on the fur bearer rule.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions for the rack on the presentation? No questions? Any none? Okay. Go to the public. Any questions on the presentation? Come on up.
Hi.
State your name.
Curious, I have somebody that had reached out to me from Carbon County, and her question
Could you give your name, please?
Yes, hi, I'm Sunday Sunt. I'm the Utah State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I'm thrilled to be here with you. So she had reached out to me a couple of weeks ago, and her question was on the trapping device. If it's on somebody's personal property in their backyard, but it happens to catch a companion animal, do they have the right to go on and release that animal if it's a weekend?
Do they have the right to go on to private property to release the animal? They have to get permission to enter anybody's private property, but we did just add that they can take their own animal out of the trap if it's in it, but if it's on private property, they'll still have to get permission. We can't give somebody permission to go on to somebody's private land.
That's right. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions from the public? Okay. I have one card here. I'd like to comment on this. Kent?
Cape Bowden Utah Trappers Association. We stand in front of you in support of the amendments as proposed.
Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay.
Seeing none, bring it back to the right. Got one more?
So it's two-part.
Come up to the mic.
Okay. I'm just my spell. Is it okay with you? So again, my name is Sundays Hunt. I'm the Utah State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. And I'm here tonight on behalf of the Humane Society of the United States and our supporters in Utah. I respectfully request that the Wildlife Board not adopt the proposed cougar recommendations. The current recommendations are not informed by the best available science and fail to encourage sustainable cougar management. Instead, they are based on inaccurate justifications and will harm the long-term persistence of cougars in our state.
I think you're, Mr. Chair, probably wanting to do that.
Part two?
Yeah, part
number cougars,
number eight. After the
That's what I wondered what part two was. Okay.
So that I actually have your presentation. Okay. And so you'll want to comment after my board presentation.
Good to know. It wasn't just part two.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll get to all of this later.
Okay, any comments from the RAP?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we accept the fur bear rule amendments as presented.
Okay. Motion?
Second.
Carl? Okay, all in favor? Okay, it's unanimous, 9. Okay, we'll move on to the Bobcat Management Plan. Wesley.
Okay. So our Bobcat Management Plan, just a little bit of history on it. The Bobcat Management Plan is not a plan that is required by state law in order for us to manage bobcats in Utah. However, the division felt it was prudent to implement a bobcat management plan and put in some measures of population and harvest so that we can maintain a sustainable bobcat population across the state. The original plan was approved in 2007 and it's set to expire in 2016. It was prepared by a bobcat working group, which consisted of DWR representatives, Trappers Association representatives, Houndsman Association representatives, a RAC representative. We had some academia that were present on the panel, as well as some non-consumptive users. What we'd like to do is propose that we do an internal review through the division every 10 years, or as needed of the Bobcat plan, and not put an expiration date on it. This current revision was an internal review with some consultation with Trappers Association and Houndsman Association and our law enforcement section. The purpose of the Utah Bobcat Management Plan is to direct the management of bobcats to ensure the future of the species through protection, propagation, and management. While considering our bobcat distribution across the state and the intrinsic scientific, educational, and recreational values for the citizens of the state of Utah. The goal of the plan is to maintain a healthy bobcat population with an existing suitable habitat and provide quality recreational opportunities for bobcat harvest while considering the social aspects of bobcat harvest. The population objective that was set in the original plan is to maintain the current statewide distribution with a reasonable proportion of older age animals. So there were some performance targets that were put in place. And the variables for those performance targets included the proportion of kittens and yearlings in the yearling animals in the harvest. What we did is we looked back at historical trends in our data and found a confidence interval where we felt comfortable that that's a good structure for our population. So our mean that we want to try and maintain is around point about 49% yearlings or kittens in the harvest. Adult survival, we want to see that at least at 68%, but the range is 65 to 72, the proportion in our harvest, I should say, not the percent. And then the percent females in our harvest, we want to see that maintained between 41 and 45. There, in the previous plan, there was a fourth performance target, and so we've actually removed that fourth performance target. What it was completely, it was based on set days per bobcat, which wasn't a biological measure. It's actually a social thing that really doesn't regulate bobcat populations at all. So we removed that from the plan and then have altered some of the triggers going forth. And so I'll just go over that really quick. So our main strategy for bobcats is to maintain baseline management if two or more of the variables are within or outside the historical range in a positive direction for population growth. And the baseline for management is 6 permits per individual. The season would run from the third Wednesday in November to March 1st, with no cap on the number of permits. If any of our performance targets are outside, if two or more of the performance targets are outside of the historical range in a negative direction for population growth, then we want to decrease the number of permits available per individual by 1 to 2, and we'll continue to do that as long as those metrics fall outside of the historical range in a negative way. If in the next year the information starts going positive, we won't want to automatically increase that. We want to give it a safety valve. And so what we would do is keep the number of permits available to individuals consistent with the previous year, as long as it's moving back toward historical range in a positive direction. And then as that continues to increase, then we increase until we get back to baseline. On season lengths, we would do the same thing. We would decrease the length of the bobcat harvest season on the front end of the season instead of the back end of the season by 1 to 2 weeks if two or more of the performance targets are outside the historical range in a negative direction for population growth. And the same thing here. As things get better, then we'd increase it until we get back to baseline. Or if it stays negative, then we want to decrease that season length. If all three of the performance targets are outside the historical range in a negative direction for population growth, then we propose that we cap the number of permits available for purchase at 80% of the number of permits that were sold the previous year. They would be sold first come, first serve at our offices, and this would be implemented into this in addition to the strategy of decreased permits and season length. After a cap has been implemented, we could begin to increase season length and number of permits available per individual by 1 to 2 weeks or 1 to 2 permits per year toward the baseline if the performance targets are moving back toward historical ranges in a positive direction. So one of the things, as we came out of the cap this last time, one of the things that everybody had concern over was that it was all the way from a cap to return to baseline with no incremental step back. And so that's what this is adding a stepwise process so that we're not all the way jumping from here to there. There are some outreach and objective sections of this plan. We want to work to increase awareness and appreciation of the general public for the role of bobcats in our ecosystems. And I won't go through each of these. It is in the packet that you received. But we do want to provide educational opportunities on the role and use of trapping and hounds and bobcat management, and determine our public knowledge and attitudes towards the role of bobcats. We do have an objective to maintain quality hunting and trapping opportunities for bobcats by working with Trappers Association and Houndsmen Association to help promote ethical and legal hunting and trapping practices, particularly through the Fur Harvester Education Program. We have worked with them to promote and develop incentive programs that encourage the reporting of violations. The Trappers Association does provide a monetary reward for people that do not do things in a lawful manner. And we want to work to help them develop additional incentive programs. And then continued, the rest of this just goes in recommending an annual coordination meeting between our wildlife section, our law enforcement section, and our trappers and houndsmen groups, and just recommendations for trappers and houndsmen that may be using the same areas to avoid conflicts. And then we have an objective in here to reduce conflicts between those involved in bobcat harvest and other recreationists. So we work to promote the setting of traps and snares away from popular hiking and recreation sites, and recommend that traps should never parallel established hiking trails. Encourage our houndsmen and trappers to avoid trapping or pursuing bobcats in highly urbanized or populated areas or popular recreation areas to avoid conflicts and capture domestic pets. And trappers should avoid using lethal sets when trapping in areas where it is likely that they may catch a domestic pet. And then just some strategies to work with recreationists to respect private property of trappers and houndsmen. And then just recommendations that trappers and houndsmen should avoid displaying dead animals in a way that may be found offensive. And then we do have some research goals and objectives. We do have some plans in place to start looking at population estimation, survival, some of our population connectivity and identification of source and sink herds in Utah. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the RAC? I have one.
Hey, so on that season restriction, some people may not understand it. I certainly don't.
Why it's on the front end and not on the back?
Because as we, so a couple of years ago when I brought bobcat recommendations out, there was a request to lengthen the season because it may increase more harvest of males instead of females. And so as we looked at that by week, it actually did decrease female take if the season were later. And so we'd rather take it off at the front end and protect females.
Okay, unless I have a question. Okay, the tags are unlimited.
Yes.
But there's six per
individual.
Trapper or individual. Okay, how do you monitor someone else? Using somebody else's tag to continue the trap. How do you?
Well, the tags are assigned to them. They have a number that's assigned to an individual. So when they bring it in, it does tie back to an individual. So you can't, it's the same as any other license or permit. You can't use somebody else's.
Okay. But can they use the same traps?
No. An individual has to use their own trap with their own number. They have to have a registered number. They can't use somebody else's traps.
Okay.
It's illegal to use somebody else's traps with somebody else's number.
Okay.
And a trap can only have one number on it, and it has to be a permanent fixture on the trap.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. Leslie, I've ran into traps that don't have any numbers on them. What's the...
Those are illegal sets, and you should they have to have a number on them in order to be a legal set in the state. So report those to our law enforcement, and they can check them out.
Said you wouldn't say anything, Larry.
But I thought they might be, I thought they might be dogs.
I have a couple of questions, Leslie, for you. On some of your strategies, you mentioned there'll be a contact person designated, but it doesn't say by a certain date annually, and that the contact person will, you know, will be made available to the public on a website, or there's
no. Oh,
you
mean the Trappers Association or
representative? Yeah, it was in your strategy slide. It said that there'll be a contact person designated from either Trappers Association or Animal Association in that. So
we do have their numbers in our guidebook.
Okay.
We don't want to put that in the plan because that changes in the plan. We don't want to change the plan.
Okay. Then you also talk about promoting and developing incentives for violations. What have you had that in the last 10 years in the first version of the plan? And
it was,
are those going to be developed by a certain time frame, or
it's not
part of that?
It's not part of it. I mean, it was in the first plan, and I carried it forth in this plan. I didn't want to change the meat of the document, and I've only been in this position for two, I don't know how long I've done this before now, but we haven't worked on that yet, at least from my perspective, and I can't comment on what was done before me. So
any other questions? Okay, we'll take it to the public. Any questions on the presentation? Okay. Seeing none, are there any comments? Kent?
Kent Fowden, president of the Utah Trappers Association. First a comment. On the process and a compliment to Leslie and the ability to pull all of the groups together and have an open dialogue to bring the trappers and hounds people and the law enforcement to have everybody in one group is phenomenal. Open dialogue, very respectful. Just the whole process needs to be complimented. I appreciate the work that Leslie's put into this and stand for you in full support of the management plan as proposed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Troy.
Good evening. Troy Justice and Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We'd like to support the recommendation from the division concerning the Bobcat plan. We'd like to recognize a few people with this. Kent, we just want to thank you and your organization for the time and effort you put into this and also the data you've collected to help make sure this is a sustainable plan. And Leslie, we know this time of year is tough on you, but we appreciate you and the time you put in. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public?
Are you on the comments or is it questions? That was a question.
These are comments, but we'll allow you to come up if you have questions. State your name.
My name is Chad Coburn. I'm a representative of the Predator for Utah Wildlife Cooperative. We support Leslie's plan, unscathed, put together as well. Good plan.
Okay, thank you. Any others? Okay. Now we'll bring it back to the board for their comments. What would you like to do?
If you've been around a few years, Bobcats have not always gone this smoothly, so I appreciate everybody's work, and I'll make the recommendation that we adopt the Bobcat plan as presented.
Okay. Motion? Second. Seconded by Ron. Okay. Vote. All in favor? Okay, vote unanimous. Hey, Leslie, you
up? Seems like this is my graphic.
Yeah. Sorry for all the icons, Leslie.
No, it's okay. I know where they are. Okay. So with the changes in the FERDER rule and the changes to the Bobcat plan, I can now do the Bobcat FERDER recommendation. And this will be really short. So our Bobcat harvest and our permits sold, the upper line here, see how this works, so I don't blind anyone. So this upper line here, the number of permits sold, so this is when we have the cap, and then this is the removal of the cap, and then this is no cap. It kind of went back to historical levels. It didn't stay this high. And I forgot, we also had a fee increase here, so there may be some of that, but some of the fee increase that also drove that number down. There were 9,447 tags sold compared to 13,000 in 2015. There were 2,338 bobcats were harvested. Total trap harvest was 1,638. Hunter harvest was 140. Our number of trappers this past year was 2,338 trappers in 2016 versus 2,578 trappers in 2015. So let's see. That I have on that. The proportion of AIDS infects in our harvest, you can see that the majority this past year were yearling males, which is really good. That's one of the performance targets that we look at. We want to have a good number of yearling males, which indicates population growth. When you have more yearlings in the harvest. You look at the average age, and it's also in line with our historical data. So looking at our plan, the percent young, our target range we want to be, the proportion in our harvest, we want it to be between 42 to 56. And our percent adult survival, we want it to be between 65 and 72. And our percent female in our harvest, we want it to be less than or equal to 41 to 45. And so this last year, you can see that on our percent juvenile, we were up to 62 from 60 the previous year and 46 in 2014. So we are seeing increase of young in the population. And again, our target is 42 to 56 with our historical range. So that is an indicator of population growth. Our percent survival was at 73%. And so that is also above our historical range. And then our percent female was right within the range. So with that, we are, our guidance from our bobcat plan, again, does say if two or more of the performance targets are within or outside of the range in a positive direction, we maintain our baseline, which is 6 tags per individual this season from the third Wednesday in November to March 1st, with no cap on the number of permits sold. So that is our recommendation today, 6 tags per individual this season. We recommend from November 16th to March 1st, and no cap again. And then our other fur bearer season dates that we recommend, beaver and mink, September 24th to April 5th, badger, gray fox, kit fox, ringtail, spotted skunk, and weasel from September 24th to March 1st, and same with marten. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Okay, any questions from the rider? Okay, take to the public. Would you like to come up, Kim? You have a question?
Kim Bowden, Utah Trappers Association. We support the recommendations as planned by the division.
Troy Jessenson, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. We support the division's proposals as presented. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other comments from the public? Okay, bring it back to the rack. Any comments from the rack?
I don't know if this is just a quick question. Is there any correlation between the number of permits sold and the price propelled of a bobcat?
Yes. So if you go back to here and you see when we have the cap on, and then the prices were actually really high during that time. So when we removed the cap, the number of people that wanted to participate went way up. However, in all of my discussions with the Trappers Association and things, you either know how to trap or you don't. And so even though that went up, I think part of the decrease was that people found that it was a lot harder than they thought it was, and so participation kind of went back down to historical levels. But yeah, the price does help drive that number up or down.
Lester, I have a question. Remind me, how often do you have to check your traps?
Every 48 hours.
48 hours, though. Okay. Now we had quite a discussion on that a few years ago.
Yeah.
Any other comments from the rack?
Likewise.
Ben?
A question. So we have strikes guns, right?
Yes.
In the state, but we don't have any kind of restriction on them or anything?
Striped skunks and red fox are considered non-protected. Well, let me go back. Where's my law enforcement? Help me. Striped skunks are spotted skunks. We do have a protected season on, but striped skunks we do not. Yeah, okay. So they're still protected wildlife, but they don't have a season.
Okay, that's good.
Leslie, on your check time, what's 48?
Correct, I should have said that.
Any other comments, questions for that? Okay. Put in your hands. Emotions.
I'll make a motion that we accept the fur bear and bobcat harvest recommendation as presented by the division.
Okay. Motion from Matt. Seconded. Christine, second the motion. Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Okay. All in favor? Okay. Carries. Votes unanimous. Okay. Lastly, our favorite person, you're up again.
Moving right along. Okay. So let's talk cougars. Cougar harvest in Utah has been managed under a limited entry system since 1999. A dramatic increase in the number of permits and harvests occurred in the mid-1990s. So if you're looking at the graph here, this is our harvest of our total harvest. The green line is our total male harvest, and then the red line is our total female harvest split out from this total. Does that make sense? So you can see that in the mid-90s, we had a dramatic increase in harvest of cougars. Since that time, that has kind of leveled out, and we're sitting right about here. We did have a slight increase this past year in our harvest. We sold, let's see, since 2000 we've averaged about 321 limited entry or split permits. And we have an average of about 254 quota. This past season, we offered 495 permits or quota, and that was broken down to 246 offered through the limited entry or split system and 249 quota. Our total harvest this past year was 371, with 45% of the permits filled for our limited entry seasons, and 68% of the permits filled during the harvest objective season. Our total harvest, including wildlife services, which is our livestock depredation take, some of our nuisance issues that we have to deal with, or other mortality like roadkill, was 394, compared with 372 this past year, or in 2015. The thing that we mostly track with our cougar harvest is the level of female take. And so you can see in the mid-90s that our female take was almost equaling our male take, and that does have population effects. And so we do want to try and maintain our female harvest way below. We don't want to see it equal our male harvest. So looking at our proportion of females to males, our plan does require that we maintain our female harvest, total female harvest, which includes our yearling females and all of that. We want to maintain that below 40% in our total harvest. You can see that for the past several years, we have maintained that below that. And this past year, females only made up, including yearling females, only made up 30% of 30% of our harvest, and that includes on our predator management units where we do, that's total statewide, including our predator management units where we do want to take more females to lower populations for depredation or nuisance or protection of other species like bighorn sheep. The other metric in our plan that we do have in place is that we do want to see older age animals in our harvest. It's a measure that we look at to make sure that we're not over harvesting and that the age makeup in the population is not too young, meaning that we took out a lot of the older age animals. From our plan, we would like to see the proportion of cougars that are 5 years or older in the harvest maintained between 15% to 20%. This right here, this past year, 40% were above 5, which indicates that we do have an older age structure in our cougar population. This past year, we also track livestock depredation. It's one thing that we are responsible for. We do have to pay livestock owners that do lose animals, sheep, goats, calves, stock cows, that type of thing. We do pay for losses of those if they've been verified through Wildlife Services. This past year, we did see the number of incidents almost double. We went from 34 to 60. The number of cougar removed by Wildlife Services at this time, we do have still some information coming in. They only removed 12.
In the whole state?
In the whole state. So I'll get to the recommendations. So I'll just break this chart down a little bit for you. So I've got it broken down by region. On the left here, you have the unit. Here in yellow, it indicates whether or not it qualifies according to our cougar management plan for predator management for either deer or bighorn sheep. So those are in yellow. This other East Canyon Davis, this one is put under to keep cougars from, we have a lot of problems there with cougars that come into town. And so we like to maintain a lower cougar population to prevent the urban and nuisance problems that we tend to get in this area. You can see here, this is last year what was approved by the Wildlife Board. This is the percent female in that unit, and this is the percent of the harvest for that unit that was over 5 years old or equal to 5 years old. So again, these units here that are under predator management, we want to see over 40% females harvested because we are trying to lower populations in those areas. These units here that are under for cougar management specifically, so they're not under a predator management strategy, the harvest of females has to maintain below 40%. And so any time, like on Morgan Southridge, that it goes above 40%, the region has, the biologist has to make a recommendation to decrease. And I can see on this, I need to paint that blue. I find my errors when I'm in front of you. So the green here are increases that the regions are recommending based on the harvest data, and the blue are decreases that the regions are recommending based on their harvest data. So this one here is a decrease of 2, decrease of 1, increase of 1, 2, 2, and 2. And then this time around, in the northern region, they are not recommending any changes to their hunt strategies. For the northeastern region, they're keeping things exactly the same as they had in this past year, with the exception of the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek, where only 5% females were harvested, and they have a very high age structure, and so they did opt to increase that by 2. On the central region, there are some changes here, and I don't know if Riley wants to come up and help present his region or not, but get up here, Riley. On their units, they're recommending increases to all of these by 2, except for on the West Desert Mountain Ranges, that is from 4 to 8. And this unit is going under for a deer trap plant that will be occurring in the future. And so they're going from 4 to 6 there. There's no female harvest in that unit at all. A couple of things that changed this last year, the Manti units all went under, the deer qualified this year as a predator management strategy in accordance with the plan. And so those units are under. Our recommendations for the southern region, they're recommending a decrease on the beaver, an increase on the Fillmore Pavant, an increase on the Pine Valley North, an increase on the Pine Valley South, the Plateau Fish Lake, an increase of 1, and the Southwest Desert, an increase of 2, and on the Zion, a decrease of 2. And then our southeastern region, and I need to highlight this as well. They're increasing these three units, the Central Mountains Northeast Manti by 3, the Southeast Manti by 3, the Nine Mile North by 2, and then they're making a recommendation to split the San Juan into 2 units and that the San Juan Desert become unlimited for protection of bighorn sheep. And I'll go over those boundaries in just a minute. So just this year, looking at the totals that we're recommending 241 limited entry and split. That's down 5 from last year. Our harvest objective quota totals are increasing a little bit by 12 from last year. And I just put those up so you can kind of see where we're sitting overall for the three years. We are recommending a boundary change in the northern region on the Box Elder Pilot Mountain. We do have an MOU with the state of Nevada that allows a cougar hunter to hunt within this boundary of Nevada if they have a cougar permit in the state of Utah. However, anytime that they cross that border, they have to obey Nevada's laws and rules. And they can do the same on Nevada side. They can hunt the Utah side. And we're just making this consistent with bighorn sheep and the elk boundary. The boundary change for the southeast region, they're recommending splitting the San Juan unit into 2 units. It will be called the San Juan Desert, which is primarily a bighorn sheep unit. There are little to no deer in this area. So that's the reason for the recommendation of unlimited going to one of the unlimited bighorn sheep units. On the San Juan Mountains, they're keeping that the same as they've had it in the past, and that will contain the rest of the unit where the deer primarily are. Our cougar season dates that we're recommending this year, our limited entry season we recommend to run from November 9th through May 31st. Our same with our split, it would start November 9th. But it was the limited entry portion of that would end February 24th. The transition date to harvest objective would occur March 2nd, and then the season for harvest objective would run through May 31st. Our harvest objective on our year route would run November 9th through November 4th, and then our unlimited quota would run November 9th through November 8th. And then our pursuit season would run November 9th through May 31st. I'm just wondering if I made a mistake on my harvest objective. They're all running together. No, not on the... I'm not, let me check the date before we finalize that. So in summary, our recommendation is in accordance with our cougar management plan. All females were considered in the harvest, including our young of the year. Our age performance target is an extra measure on population performance. And most of the increases that you see are on certain units, and they should help address livestock depredation in addition to some of our deer issues. We double-checked to make sure that it also took into consideration livestock issues, and it does overlap. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Misty. Any questions? This presentation. Okay, we'll go to the audience. Public, any questions on this presentation?
Sorry, Leslie. Chad Coburn. I didn't get a hold of you the other day. What was the reason for the increase on that Wasatch West strawberry? It's not under predator. It's not under predator management. It doesn't seem to be beyond those thresholds. I just wondered what was the reason for the increase on that.
So part of it is that's one of the areas where we have a lot of livestock damage, and the livestock owner there, we just paid about $21,000 in depredation to. And so we are trying to help bring those payments down. There's also another owner in that area that we paid about $18,000 to.
So I'm blown away. We had 12 statewide, and you know who I'm talking about up north that claims that he's getting 8 out of house and home. That's not a very high number, you know.
No,
what I mean?
He took care of his own issues.
Yeah. All right. Well, that answers my question.
Yeah, and here too, I mean, there is a little bit of room because we do have an older age objective. You got 50% of the harvest that's over 5 years and older. And female is still below 40%. So there is a little bit of room to increase.
But if we're looking and staying aggressive on all the other predator management units, that's what I consider a source unit. Don't you think?
Dan Cockhan, Utah Houndsman Association. Leslie, what's the status on the Central Mountain units? They're all under predator management for deer. What's the status with the deer?
Part of the thing on the deer is that when we looked at the model data, the populations there are not continuing. The models indicate that the populations are stable and not increasing, which is kind of where we want them to be, and our plan says increasing. So that's part of the reason that they were put under, and they're one of the only ones that maintained a stable status this last year.
Any other questions? State your name.
Chet Young. I got a question. one probably more for law enforcement. We're talking about the depredation. I was looking through what we've paid these livestock owners year after year after year. We do major increases on the lions, but yet I'm not seeing what we're paying them go down. It always seems to stay at a minimum. Are we looking into this at all?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the issue. I mean, we work with wildlife services who tries to remove the appropriate animal that's doing damage at the time. But we also want to try and use our sportsmen in those areas where we've got conflicts or problems. That's one thing that we are trying to work on is reducing depredation, because we don't want to be impacting livestock, and we don't want, they don't want us to be paying them either. They would rather have their animal than a check from the division. So that's, we're trying to work it out.
Right. So does the division have anybody that's double checking wildlife services?
Absolutely.
Like going in?
Yeah, we work closely with wildlife services. I talk to them all the time.
In your opinion, you feel that they're being honest and fair?
Yes, I do.
With their claims? Okay.
Yes,
thank you.
I do.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
What is the percentage you pay for the livestock?
So what we pay for livestock, in order to qualify for a payment, we get the amounts that are provided by the Department of Agriculture. And in order to receive payment, you have to pay into the head tax.
The question I want is, do you pay the full value of that animal, or do you pay a percentage of that animal?
So we are allocated $180,000. This year we spent $148,000. If we go above the $180,000, then we have to prorate. And we only pay on confirmed losses. We don't pay on reported losses. So this year we paid the full amount that was confirmed because we didn't hit the $180,000 cap. Does that?
I know what it is. I just wanted you to explain.
Okay.
Wesley, I would assume confirmed means that you have somebody verify that.
So what happens is the livestock owner will contact Wildlife Services, and they will have usually a reported number. They'll say, I lost five. Wildlife Services will come out, walk the area, and they'll try and confirm those five or any additional that they can find.
Okay. I have a question, Wesley. Are most of these sheep, or are they also cattle?
On the cougar, it was also cattle. All of the bear claims were mostly sheep. There were some other losses. There were some turkeys, six cats. We don't pay on those kinds of things, but there were turkeys, goats, and cats from southern Utah. Specifically, one lady got hit really hard. But we don't pay on those. But yeah, most of them are sheep, and there are some cattle in there.
Do you keep track of the difference between whether it's a cougar or a bear?
Yeah, we track all of that.
What kind of percentage?
So this last year,
right after the herding of cats.
So this past year, we paid $148,995 for livestock depredation. $68,000 of that was for cougar depredation. The other was for bear depredation.
Okay, any more questions from the audience?
My name is Jason Binder. I have a couple questions. On these units that were increasing cougar permits, how many of those did we increase deer permits?
I can't answer that. I'm not over the deer program, so.
Okay.
Can you answer, Riley?
Without being exact, most everyone. That is a tough question without having the data set beside it. I can talk to you after and get your number and follow up on that question if you'd like, but I don't have that number off the top of my head, but the majority.
Any other questions?
Leslie?
I guess just to clarify a little bit, the Cougar plan does take into account deer population performance, which is something that the plan never took into account previously. So we are trying to look at deer populations and how they are before we respond with predator management. And so that's been plugged into this plan. It doesn't track how many hunters hunt deer or anything like that. It's actual postseason objectives, population management objectives, and survival in females. So that's what we're looking at.
Okay, I noticed there, I think I'm seeing it right, that there was a pretty good increase in the number of coos that were taken last year.
We did have a better winter than we've had in past years, and so I think harvest was a little bit higher than it has been previously because we did get a lot of snow in some of our southern region units.
Yeah, I was just wondering if that's just because there's more cougars.
I would say that it's more weather condition related than a direct link to increase in cougar populations.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Comments?
I just wondered if you had a chance to look at those dates.
Yeah, the dates are okay. Sorry. Thanks. I just had a brain freeze for a minute.
Okay. Any comments? I have two cards on that. Troy Justison.
I agree.
And Sunday.
Troy Justison, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. We support the division's recommendation with one change and one addition. The change would be on the Manti Southwest. Currently, the Manti unit is under predator management for deer, meaning we're not an objective. And it doesn't make sense to me that one side of the mountain we're issuing 16 tags, and the other side we got 5. And I know I'm stepping in here. I mean, this is a hot topic with our membership. But yeah, a lot would like to see it go to harvest objective, that we think we've reached a happy medium. We would just recommend that we move those permits from 5 to 8. Then the only other addition we'd have is SFW supports the BYU Cougars going to the Pac-12. No. Not the Pac-12, but the Big 12.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, what's he going to do?
Okay, Sunday, coming up?
You sure I'm good this time?
You're good.
Apparently you didn't want to hear it twice. All right. On behalf of the Humane Society of the United States, HSUS, and our supporters in Utah, I respectfully request the Wildlife Board not adopt the proposed Cougar recommendations. The current recommendations are not informed by the best available science and fail to encourage sustainable Cougar management. Instead, they are based on inaccurate justifications that will harm the long-term persistence of cougars in our state. While the HSUS does not support trophy hunting of cougars, we urge the Wildlife Board to only adopt sustainable quotas if cougar hunting is to continue in Utah. The Utah Division of Wildlife Resources increased trophy hunting quotas are based on the false belief that killing more cougars will grow mule deer and bighorn sheep herds, as well as reduce nuisance and livestock depredation issues. The best available science shows that this is not true. In recent studies that involve predator removals, those actions generally had no effect on deer herd numbers. Access to adequate nutrition, studies show, is the key factor in mule deer dynamics. Increased trophy hunting on cougars will not boost mule deer populations. Bighorn sheep are also primarily limited by environmental factors, not cougar predation. Instead of killing cougars, we need to address the true culprits of mule deer decline, trophy hunters, habitat loss, lack of adequate nutrition, and the spread of disease from livestock. Increased cougar hunting quotas have been shown to increase complaints and livestock depredations, not reduce them. Heavy hunting of cougars disrupts their social structure and causes an increase in the young males immigrating to an area. These young males are typically inexperienced hunters and are more likely to go after an easy kill like unprotected livestock. Utah's cougar populations are overhunted and are in need of reduced quotas, yet the current proposal recommends an increase in the number of cougar hunting permits as well as the creation of the state's fourth unlimited quota unit. Based on the best available research by our country's leading cougar experts, including Utah-based researchers, these recommendations far exceed what would be considered a sustainable hunting quota for Utah's cougar population and threaten the species' persistence in our state. In conclusion, Utah statutes say agencies may not establish rules that are, quote, not supported by substantial evidence, end quote. The current cougar recommendations are not supported by substantial evidence. In fact, the scientific evidence argues against it. We urge the Wildlife Board to not adopt these recommendations and instead call for reduced hunting quotas that better reflect sustainable cougar management.
Thank you. Ben, did you want to comment on this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dan Cockane, Utah Houndsman Association. We were involved in the drafting of the cougar management plan, and we take exception to that. We believe the science that was available to us was sound, and we think it's a good plan. We support the division's recommendations on the cougar. The only comment we would have is we're working really hard at educating our people on how the system works, and we realize that the recommendations for hunt strategy and the numbers come from the regions. This year we were very, very pressed with time, and we would just like to find a way that we could have more time to have input into the process. Maybe Leslie can talk about that a little bit.
What happened this year? We're kind of held at bay because one of our objectives in our plan is looking at age structure. So we have to send all of the teeth that we collect out to an outside laboratory. By contract, they were supposed to have it by a certain date, and they went over that date. And so there's absolutely nothing we could do because we do not want to make recommendations without the science or the data.
Yeah, we understand that.
So we're trying. We sent a very strongly worded letter to the contractor saying that we're kind of limited because there aren't that many people that age do the age data, so they kind of have us at bay because we can say, well, we won't use you anymore. But then what do we do? So we're kind of we'll work it out.
Thanks. And that's how you pass the
bug. Jason.
My name is Jason Binder. Many of you know me, some of you don't. I've been through this process a lot of years, way back in the 90s when we first started this harvest objective, and all the lions were killed through up to 600 in that first year. There was kind of a step that everybody looked at. When the mule deer numbers started coming up, these harvest objectives were supposed to start dropping out. They were supposed to go away. It was supposed to go back to limited entry. This many years, we're still looking at all this harvest objective. We raised deer permits by around 4,000. We raised elk permits, and now we're wanting to raise cougar permits. Deer and elk numbers are up. Everybody's admitted that the groups all passed to put out more deer and elk permits, and now we want to increase cougar permits, more harvest objective. This harvest objective and this unlimited harvest should have been gone a long time ago, and I'd like you RAC members to look at that. Thank you.
Let me just clarify. When the plan was redone this last time, harvest objective was left in as a strategy that's not particularly for predator management. Some of our units are managed better using harvest objective, and some of the regions liked using that as a strategy. So just because a unit is on harvest objective doesn't necessarily mean that it's under predator management. It's the strategy that the region felt works best with the landowners in the area and that type of thing. So harvest objective as predator management is not exactly how it is. Unlimited harvest units are only on units where bighorn sheep are the only prey source for cougars in that unit. There are not alternative sources of prey, such as mule deer, which are the primary prey species for cougars. It's very limited, and in order to qualify, it has to have only bighorn sheep. There are research studies out there that do show that cougars, specifically cougars, can key in on bighorn sheep and significantly impact those populations, and I believe Arizona was one of the states that had that research article, and we can provide it if you'd like to see it, but bighorn sheep are subject to predation when there are no other prey species.
Thank you. Chad, Colbert.
Chad Colbert, United Wildlife Cooperative, predator representative. I, like Dan, sat through the revision of the Cougar Management Plan. When we did it, ordered by the Wildlife Board, there was a lot of creation, a lot of confusion in it. We sat through it. There's a lot of work done between the direct correlation of mule deer survival, not capacity. I have a capacity. I want $5 million in my 401, but I make it by growing it yearly. We are growing mule deer in Utah all the way through. If we only focus on capacity, we'll never understand the fact that each year we are growing mule deer, like Jason said. We're selling more permits. Capacity means nothing. That means that's what we can hold totally. It doesn't make sense. I encourage the RAC to support the plan as it stands. I've watched year after year as the plans go to the Wildlife Board, including even after we did the revision, they had to sort through and make even more decisions above and beyond the plan. Plans work. I believe it's staying right inside the threshold of the 40% females. It's staying inside with your adult survival. We have big problems in cougar management when we leave the plan, when we leave biological soundness and get into emotional, save the mule deer. Let's stay focused on what we're doing. We're growing mule deer. Cougar are being managed properly. Thank you.
Thanks, Chad. Any other comments from the public? I want to compliment Leslie too, because a few years ago this thing was upside down and sideways. I mean, I couldn't even hardly understand what the plan was. You know, I mean, I'm not really smart. It was very, very difficult to follow through and know what was, how things were set up properly. So I think they've really done a good job of kind of streamlining this and simplifying this in a way that I think is much more understandable and to the general public. Thank you for that. Okay, we'll bring it back to the RAC. Any comments, proposals? Larry?
Okay, Troy made a recommendation about the people. I'm not familiar with the people. Could you show that to us?
It was actually the Southwest Manti, and let me go there. So in the Southwest Manti, it's only at 28% females. It is under, it was moved under four deer, and 31% of the harvest is five or older. So there is room for increase on that, and we wouldn't be opposed to that if that's the way you went. The biologist there is Dennis, and he recommended being conservative on it.
What would be your suggestion on an increase?
I'll ask Riley what he would like.
We support the biologist recommendation. As you can see, according to the plan, that it has room to go in that direction, but Dennis felt strongly that it stay at five at least for another year for the reasons of the deer population staying stable, and wanted to just see how that unit could handle staying stable for another year. So Leslie is accurate, is on the borderline, but we fully support Dennis and his recommendation of keeping that in mind.
So could you take permits from the other? Didn't Troy say that there was one side of the mountain versus the other?
Oh, we don't want to do that.
You don't want to?
No. If you want to increase that, then just increase that unit. I wouldn't take away from somebody else's recommendation.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other comments? Proposals?
Question, Leslie. So, in your opinion, if we went from 5 to 8, that would still be doable without a problem?
You know, on all of the other units, when they increased, they've been doing about 2 to 3. I think maybe 2 might be okay without going too crazy on it.
Right, we could 2 be okay with. I mean, I know we want to do it, but if they want to increase it, would 2 be okay? We would leave that completely up to the rack and their recommendations. It's what they see with it. So,
Leslie, is the overall number of permits, are they pretty close the same as it was last year? Within 1 or 2? Yeah, so the only difference this year, like I said, our limited entry and split total was decreased by 5, and our harvest objective quota totals were increased by 12. And a lot of that, when you looked at those charts and you saw some decreased here, so it's kind of a shell game moving from here to there type thing. So it's not increasing dramatically overall, just a few here and there. But the harvest objective quota totals did increase by 12. If you increase this, it would increase that from 241 to whatever you added to that unit.
Do you have numbers on the depredation that was on the cougars that were killed in that area about raising them up or not? Because I'd rather have a sportsman harvest than have the DWR kill.
Right.
Personally.
Do you know about depredation on that unit specifically?
I don't, Leslie, I'm sorry.
I don't have that with me specifically. This one wasn't increased because of livestock depredation. This would be an increase because of deer also. So that's the other consideration.
Carl?
We all know that lions bring a lot of passion from a lot of different areas. We've seen that tonight. I do believe that the science we're using is the best that we've got. Over the years, we've watched it go, taking a lot of the emotion and social out of it and bringing it back to the science. And so I'm comfortable with the science that we're using in making these recommendations. And we're down to one unit. What I'd like to do is make a motion that we approve the plan as presented. And if you want to increase that tag, then you vote against this motion, and we'll have a second vote. So my motion will be that we approve all the tags and permits as presented by Leslie right now.
Thank you, Carl.
I'll second that.
Okay, George seconded. Okay. Any other questions on the motion? Okay, all in favor of the motion as presented? 7 in favor. Any opposed? 2. 2 against. The motion passes as presented. Okay. Thank you.
I think you're done with me.
Mark Farmer, Habitat Program Manager.
Kenny Johnson.
This is a lot.
Okay. Let's go to Kenny Johnson first.
This is a shorter Kenny Johnson.
As you may or may not notice, I am not Kenny Johnson, something I am grateful for every day. Kenny was not able to make it tonight, so I am filling in. My name is Phil Gray. I'm a business analyst in the U.S. We're going to be talking about the fun stuff now, the real interesting stuff. We're going to be talking about money. We're going to be talking about a few fee changes, increases. I think I need to raise this up. It's really short. Okay. So we're going to be talking about three categories of speed changes. There's going to be two reductions, two small increases due to housekeeping, and a couple of new opportunities and programs that we're investigating. So just to remind everybody, get you familiar with the whole fee change process. It's not as simple as all of our other rules and regulations. We do go through the RAC and board process. Those recommendations and ideas are then taken to the governor's office and kind of yay or nay there. Once that's done, they go to the legislature for review and then introduction into the legislative session in January. The Natural Resources Appropriations Committee approves, modifies, or rejects the proposal. They can do any or all of the above. Might not take our recommendations at all. They might change a handful of other things. Once the committee approves the fees, they're included in the general appropriation bill and voted on by all legislators. And then any fee changes will take effect next fiscal year. So anything that we're discussing here tonight, the fee won't become applicable until July 1st of 2017. So some of the impacts we're talking about. Most of our programs are funded primarily by anglers and hunters. We're trying to balance the fees with the cost of operating these programs. We don't want to gouge our sportsmen, but we also don't want to be bleeding money into programs that aren't able to support themselves. So the balance is critical. We don't try and collect all the possible revenue that we can, but we still need to be able to cover the cost of managing these programs. We also are very aware of how fees impact participation. You saw in Leslie's program presentation that huge drop in bobcat permits last year. A good portion of that was due to increasing the fee. A good portion of it was because it was so cheap and unlimited the year before, everybody bought them. And then as you said, it's not that easy to trap bobcats. So a lot of people learned they couldn't do it and then weren't willing to pay to do it the next year when it went up in price. So as a rule of thumb, like I said before, we're just trying to make sure that the possible revenue covers the potential programs. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is a general a reduction in the cost of a general turkey permit for youth. So we want to encourage and get youth participating in the spring and fall general season hunts. Right now the fee for a turkey permit for anybody, for a resident, is $35. We want to reduce that fee to $25 for resident youth. This would not apply to non-resident youth. Overall, we're anticipating a reduction in revenue for around the tune of $20,000. But we feel that this decrease would be worth the potential of getting more youth involved in the sport. We have seen a decrease in youth applying for limited entry youth or turkey permits and purchasing general season permits. So we want to try and boost that along a little bit. The second thing is our multi-season limited entry deer tags. So we have a multi-season limited entry and multi-season premium limited entry. So it's a multi-season tag on those units. They get to hunt all of the seasons established by the RAC and board. So it could be anywhere from 3 to 4 seasons. When we went through and did our big game fee changes a few years ago, we added a fee for the multi-season limited entry elk, separate from the regular limited entry elk, but we neglected to do that for the deer. We missed it somehow. Didn't notice it until it already went through the appropriations and voted on by the legislature. So what we want to do is establish a fee for the multi-season limited entry and premium limited entry deer tags, just to recognize that it is an increased opportunity and does have an increased value. So right now, somebody that draws one of these tags gets to hunt all of the established seasons but pays the same price as the guy that drew just the rifle season. So the proposal is we increase the premium limited entry season cost for a resident from $168 to $305, and non-resident from $568 to $1,025. For the premium limited entry, that was the premium limited entry. For the regular limited entry, it would go from $80 to $145 for a resident and $468 to $845 for a non-resident. Since there are so few of these permits available, the increase in revenue is negligible. It's only about $3,000. But again, we just want to
make sure that that permit is valued where it should be. Now, the next one, and I'm sure this is going to generate a lot of talk and discussion, we'll get into that, but one of the ideas that came out of the elk plan committee was the idea of a dedicated hunter elk tag, and the division liked the idea on the surface and the concept, but we already have a good balance of quality volunteer programs for our deer dedicated hunters. Looking at it, if we did this for elk, we would really, really be stretching ourselves to find good quality volunteer programs for dedicated hunters if we had an elk program. So the idea that was brought up was this potential of a multi-season general elk tag. So the idea would be to be able to hunt a general season elk in all three weapon seasons. And right now, we don't know how it's going to work. We don't even know if the wildlife section is going to implement it as a strategy. But we do want the fee in our pocket in case it does come up, because it has to go through the legislature and be approved. Director Sheehan is big on telling us just because we have a fee doesn't mean we have to use it. So we want to have this, and we want to be ready so if we do decide to implement this plan, we don't have to go back to the legislature and ask for the fee. So the idea is we're just going to triple the cost of a general season tag. So right now a resident is $50, the non-resident, can't remember right offhand, but so the resident elk tag would be $150, you'd be able to hunt all three seasons. The non-resident would be $700, you'd be able to hunt all three seasons. Additionally, right now we want to also decrease the cost of a mitigation elk tag. So these are the vouchers that we give landowners when they're having problems in their property. We give the landowner themselves 5 tags free of charge, but then we also give them up to 20 vouchers that they can hand out to whomever they want. Those vouchers have been redeemed for a cow elk tag, and it costs $50. So we want to reduce that from 50 to 30 and take a little bit more of the burden off the landowner in trying to resolve these issues. Overall, we figure this will increase revenue by about $90,000 if this plan is implemented. Next is our outdoor recreation program. So we sponsor and put on a number of outreach programs each year at our shooting centers, regional offices, hatcheries, all over the place. So we know how much an event is going to cost. We want the ability to be able to charge for those events accordingly just to recover the cost of the event. So for example, shooting centers and RV camping, right now Lee K Center is the only one that's able to do this. It has the facilities and the hookups to allow overnight camping. We're asking for a fee range of $10 to $50, so we don't have to keep coming back year after year and asking for a fee increase. We would just keep, we would have a range established, and we would be able to charge accordingly when needed. We estimate that in implementing this will increase our revenue by about $11,500, but again, that increased revenue is to cover the cost of increased program costs. Finally, in summary, they're just minor adjustments that we hope will increase and retain youth in some of our sporting, especially in turkey hunting, create new opportunities for the public in the multi-season elk tags, take some pressure off some landowners in trying to resolve mitigation problems, and provide a small amount of revenue to cover the cost of some of these programs. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from the rack?
Do we have any idea how many number of applicants who applied for the premium multi-season deer?
Not right offhand. I can get that to you in the morning, though.
What I'm curious about is, if you're looking for a revenue increase, why wouldn't you just raise it $20 and make money on that application fee instead of just raising the tag if you're only giving 6 out? You could have a chance of making triple the money by raising it to $20 and keeping $10.
The idea is not to increase revenue. We're not trying to make more money. We're just trying to acknowledge that that permit has a greater value than its single season counterpart, which right now it doesn't. It's the same cost. So it was just missed in the last go around. As far as the application fee, we have one application fee. that's on the book. So if we wanted to raise the fee, we would raise the fee for all applications. We wouldn't be able to do it for a single hunt. I don't think the legislature would ever go for that of nitpicking one or two hunts here and there and raising the fee.
Well, I realize that. I guess the point I was making on that is that the premium hunt is a very limited number of tags that go out. So I was just looking at it, and I understand where you're coming from, trying to make it up to where it should have been originally anyway.
Right.
But I'm just looking at the future on how we try to raise revenue. Obviously, on six tags, you're not going to pay very many salaries on that, whether we're raising it or not.
No. And I think you might be right on six tags, and that would be on all units statewide.
So right. You're not talking about a lot of money raised right
now.
So.
No. Again, we're not talking about increasing revenue. We're just talking about making it equitable. One thing that we are afraid of doing is once the general public realizes that tag costs the same as the limited entry tag, nobody's going to apply for the limited entry tag. They're going to apply for the multi-season tag because why spend that much money on the rifle hunt when I can spend that much money on the multi-season hunt? So it's going to balance itself back out.
Except
and people
for,
are already figuring that out.
Except for somebody with logic and realizes there are only six tags. So why waste your draw with no chance of drawing, really? But the other question is one of the clarification. So the ones with the multi-season elk is just something in the future. That's just to have it in the books to say if we decide to do that,
exactly,
that's what
yes.
we're going to implement.
Yep.
Okay.
Questions. All right. Well, the public, any questions?
Sure. Troy Justinson, representing myself. Keep going. Right there. My question is, when did the division develop a sense of humor? And that's Chris Farley right there.
I'm glad someone caught that. Actually, so in my defense, I did not create this proposal. I was told late Friday afternoon that I would be doing this. And when Kenny created this, he was told it didn't have any pictures. He was told to throw some in. And he put this one in here and emailed it to Mike Canning, our assistant director, thinking that he wouldn't even see it or just laugh and say, change that slide. And Mike came back and said it was hilarious. Don't change it.
Yeah, I don't hear you.
I would like to take credit for that, but I really can't.
Any questions from the public?
Just for the record, the deer lived in that movie.
State your name.
Luke Allen. I represent myself and the hunters that would be for my family. Was there any reason, particularly, that we didn't look at a dedicated hunting program for elk originally, or was it just something that we didn't think of originally?
So your question is about the dedicated hunter specifically for elk?
Yeah. Sure.
And why?
Yeah, but was there a reason why it wasn't brought up before with deer, or was it just missed for some...
Honestly, I don't know the whole history of the dedicated hunter program back originally when it was created for deer. What I do know is in this situation, it was brought up by the committee that was established to create the statewide health plan. That was one of the ideas floated, and the plan said that we would investigate the idea or the potential of creating a multi-season or a dedicated hunter health plan.
Okay, so I think there would be dedicated hunters that would be interested in doing that. I understand that you want to be careful about, you know, jumping head into it, but I believe there would be others that would be interested in a program set up for that.
Without a doubt there'd be interest in that. I would be interested in that. But our concern is we barely have enough good quality volunteer programs for dedicated hunters for deer now to get them to meet the hour requirements for the deer program. So to try and come up with even more volunteer programs, more volunteer projects, aside from them sitting there doing data entry, which nobody will do, we wouldn't have any quality volunteer programs. So that's our concern.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I'd venture to say when the dedicated hunter for deer came out, our elk populations weren't where they are now either. Probably played a major factor in that decision. Right now, we're enjoying the best elk numbers we've had, probably ever.
Yeah, and I think they're looking for another program to help keep those numbers under control, too.
somewhere around the way.
I think that's a, I think it's a really worthy program to really look at. As far as the hours are concerned, maybe you make the hours for a dedicated hunter in relationship to elk make them less. So they don't have to do 32. Maybe they can they only need to do 16. I mean, there's a lot of things that could be done to make that, you know, more workable. You know, 40 hours for dedicated hunter for viewer, way too much. And that reduction back to 32 hours came out of this rack, too. And so we do do some things, good things here. And it does happen. The wildlife board does think it. Okay, bring it back to the... So is there any comments? Any more comments? Okay. Bring it to the board for your consideration. Ken?
I have one question on the youth turkey hunt at 25. We have less than 5% of our youth involved in hunting or fishing. And I just think that even really 25 is too much for youth, especially if we're trying to get them involved in the hunting and fishing in this state. We're losing our youth big time. We don't have enough recruitment to sustain hunting and fishing in this state. And so I would like to see the proposal even come down from the 25. And I would like to propose that we change the youth hunt to 20. I'd actually like to see it go to 15 for the youth turkey hunt.
So would you like to make a...
I'd like to make a motion that I'd like to propose that we change the youth turkey hunt from 25 that's been proposed to 15.
15?
I'll second that.
Okay, so that's proposed and second, Dan? The discussion of the motion...
Can I ask a question? That's just for the tag, right? That doesn't include a small game license, right?
That's for the tag.
That's just the tag. So.
Yeah, correct. Anybody would still have to have a small game hunting or combination.
What is the cost of a small game hunting license right now for, what is it, 17 and under?
We've got so many fees now, I can't remember exactly.
$30 for a combination.
Give me 2 seconds and I can find that for you, right?
It used to be like that.
What would be better if you just not take the entry program? Anybody that applies to the girls goes to the three, next up, and I can find them all the time when I'm on.
I know for youth under 13, it's $11 for a small game license. And then it breaks out a little bit different depending on the age. Do you recall, Jenny?
I'm just saying 13.
That's okay. You don't need to. I guess when that comes up, I guess that would be my big recommendation is you know, where can we cut small game license or fishing licenses? And maybe they're already quite low.
We did just a couple years ago. We implemented the multi-year license and changed a whole bunch of fees around. So I've actually got it right here. So under 13 for a resident, for just the basic hunting license is $11. 14 to 17 is $16. For a combination license is 14 to 17 is $20. So it's still pretty reasonable considering the adult one is $38 for a resident.
Is the goal to lower that to get more youth involved in hunting? I mean, that's the main goal of lowering the fee?
The turkey fee, yes.
Yeah. So I guess the point I would make is that we really want to get them involved. You could leave that fee at 25, but that 12 to 13 year old, if their dad draws out and they can get a tag, that'll go for free. You got them hooked in. And then at that point, it's never a problem to come up with the money after they want to hunt. But I mean, I guess the point I'm looking at is if our total goal is the recruitment to get people involved in the outdoors and going, I don't know how many people would take advantage of that in the first place. But, I mean, the reality of it is you're not talking a lot of money for that 12- or 13-year-old kid to go out and hunt with an adult and make that as a drug, that they have to hunt with an adult.
Sure.
So kind of like a mentoring program or whatever you want to call it.
If I can make one point, especially to lowering it that drastically, I would be nervous about lowering it that far. We didn't look at the output, you know, into the future of what would happen if we did decrease it that much. So I honestly couldn't say, but I would be leery about just pulling the trigger that hard on it. This is not the only obstacle to youth being recruited into turkey hunting. So this is just one part of our plan to do this. It also includes a lot of outreach stuff and other recruitment ideas. So don't think that the fee is the only thing that's standing in people's way of getting kids out there and hunting turkey. There's other obstacles that we are planning to address with that.
Okay.
This is just one prong of it, but this prong has to go through the legislature.
Okay. We have a motion and a second on the floor. We need to go forward with that. Have a vote on that. Okay, the motion is to lower the youth turkey general season, correct?
Yes.
To $15 from $25 that was recommended. Okay. So, all in favor of that motion, raise your hand. 6 in favor. Opposed. 3 opposed. So the motion carries. Any other discussion? Any proposals that you'd like to make?
I just have a question. On your education, where you're going to charge coverage fees, have you done a feasibility study to know if people will attend your event and still pay those fees?
Yes, we have. We have investigated. I couldn't tell you the exact details of it. I can definitely get you that information.
I just am curious because in my other life I do this and I know what the complaint level is.
Yeah, and we're anticipating that there will be some resistance, but again, these are programs that are bleeding money.
And by the way, Christine, thanks for the invite.
Yeah. And my question related directly to that was that range. Is that described some? I mean, how do you figure out where it ends up in that range that you provided? I can't remember a range ever in any kind of proposal like this. So.
Yeah. So the idea is, this is kind of a new concept to the way we do business. But what the plan is once we have the range, we will assess a seasonal fee. We won't be changing it weekend to weekend. It will be set and it will be posted well in advance, and it will be comparable to other market fees.
Yeah, if you got water and hookups for RVs, $50 is the market.
Oh yeah, indeed. Especially if you're shooting pretty black.
Yeah, I really hope the dedicated effort helps. Okay, you did. Okay, any other comments, questions from the rack on this? I guess, go ahead.
I look at the sheet filled out. So I just represent the hunters to my family. So on the youth turkey hunt, so this last year when we were getting ready to put input to turkey hunts, my brother, who had just barely completed all the requirements to hunt in the state, my dad didn't even know that the youth turkey hunt existed until I went and looked and found that it was there. And he was kind of shocked that it actually existed. He's like, when did it come up? He's like, I have no idea when it was actually implemented. So the one thing that I would stress a lot with getting youth out there is that get the information out to a lot more of the seasoned hunters. That way, if they are able to get to their grandkids or to sons more in advance, you possibly would have more involvement with the youth. Honestly, from what I see from the day to day with work and everything, they're into tech toys a lot of time, but if they are informed about this being available to them,
they'd be more gung-ho that. But then finding out last minute, they oftentimes lose a lot of, you know, focus on wanting to get into it. More the point of training it across.
Thank you. I think the division does do a lot of outreach. I see articles in local newspapers and things like that. So hopefully that will continue, and we can get the hunters who enjoy it to talk about it too with them. That would be awesome.
So, you know, if we can flood the bulletin boards along I-15 with the number of bulletin boards the governor has up there,
that'd be
with a youth turkey hunt, I think we'd get some youth turkey hunters out there.
How about we just create an app like that Pokemon Go thing?
Turkey Man.
That's what we need to come up with. That's what the craze is now. If we can do something like that, we'd be in business.
You're killing it.
Okay. I think we need to move on. One more item.
Then we need to approve all the other. We need to approve the other fees.
Okay.
We only approve.
Let's go ahead and do that. Then is there a motion to approve the balance of the?
I'll make the motion that we approve the rest of the proposals.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a second. Motion and a second.
Was it Ron?
Yeah,
I'll
do it.
Okay, all in favor? Okay, vote unanimous. Okay, now we can go to the Waldberg HMA Management Plan. Mark Farmer.
Thank you, Mark. I make a motion. That's
You know, Jason, I gotta just say something. I think your staff looks great in ties, man.
Yeah, right. They really do.
They went on well with the ties, and they're really quality.
But well, you can eat grapes and see stuff at all.
You couldn't destroy this tie if you wanted to.
You could still want it all day long. And you're good.
Well, thanks for having me today. Tonight, we talked to you about the Waldberg Wildlife Management Area. Just completed our habitat management plan. And I'd like to talk to you about that tonight. Waldberg property is one of our second largest WMA in the central region. We have 42 different WMAs in our region. It's just over 11,000 acres in total. Let me kind of give you an idea of where this sits. We've got Deer Creek over here and Highway 189 on this side. Highway 40, we got Midway and Heber to the north. This property is very important because, as you know, the Heber Valley has become very developed, and this is one of the few places where there's a large litter range available to a big game in that valley. A lot of deer and elk winter on this property. Elevations range from about 1,500 feet near the reservoir to over 8,000 feet on the southeast portion of the property. Why does the division own the property? Basically to preserve and protect critical big game winter range. We also want to minimize depredation by big game on agricultural lands. We do have some of those in the Waldberg Valley that have problems with elk and deer depredation. We also provide hunting opportunities for our constituents. Primary wildlife species are deer and elk, and primarily the winter. We also have a lot of upland game birds and our other wildlife, non-game wildlife species, cougar, bobcat, coyote, and there is some black bear habitat on the southeast portion of that property. Typically, we're wintering between 700 to 800 deer in the wintertime there and 300 to 400 elk. So property is very important, and it gets a lot of heavy use. Habitat characteristics, typically it's dominated by big sagebrush at the lower elevations. This is typical in the wintertime. In early March, there's deer all over that property. We also have oak brush and mixed mountain shrublands at higher elevations. And a lot of these communities are heavily browsed by winter and big game animals. This is typical of our lower elevation big sage communities. And we have quite a bit of underbrush on some of these properties, on some of these areas. Higher elevations, we got oak. This is looking north towards Midway from the property there in Big Hollow. And bought these big shrub communities. This one here is a trend study. That's why they have the sign there. But it's always monitored every 5 years. But it gets a lot of heavy use. There's a lot of different kinds of shrubs on this piece. The habitat manager plan basically describes the property, describes how the land is going to be managed, and some of the goals and objectives and the strategies that we use. These plans were mandated to prepare a habitat management plan for all of our WMAs. We have participation by local people, governments, and in the planning process, and these plans require a review process before approval, and this is one of those review processes, or review stops here. It's kind of the last review stop. We've done a lot of coordination with the general public, Wasatch County, adjacent private landowners, and we've gotten input from the public. Some of the issues, the management issues we're dealing with is habitat restoration, just our annual operation maintenance, public access and use, and boundary issues with adjacent landowners. The plan basically is broken into six parts, six sections. The background information talks about the purposes of division ownership, historic uses, public recreation opportunities, key wildlife and key wildlife species. Talks about all that. The next part is property information section, which talks about property description, land acquisition history, and encumbrances. Property inventory talks about existing capital improvements, cultural resources, sensitive species, habitat types and condition, habitat limitations, human-related problems, those type of things. Management goals and objectives talk about how the plan relates to the division strategic plan. That talks about the species management plans, like the deer and the elk management plan, which this is consistent with, and wildlife action plan. And then the strategies for property management, that basically talks about fences, roads, weeds, signs, kiosks, things like that. And then the strategies for habitat management. Talk about habitat improvement, how we're going to manage fire, and access management. All of the goals and objectives in the habitat management plan are consistent with the goals and objectives of the division strategic plan. Resource goal basically talks about expanding wildlife populations and conserving sensitive species by protecting habitat. The objectives under that goal are to protect existing wildlife habitat and improve critical habitats, increase fish and wildlife populations to meet objectives, and conserve sensitive species. So all of our goals and objectives are consistent with those. So some of the strategies for habitat management, big one is to maintain and improve winter browse on this property, because that's why the animals are there, and that's what keeps them alive in the wintertime. So we use a lot of strategies to improve our sagebrush and winterbrush communities. Some of those being livestock grazing to graze out some of our grass, grazing the grasses, keep the shrubs healthy. Doing shrub sealing and seeding projects, which we've done in the past and will continue in the future. Noxious weed control, particularly squirrel snapweed on this property, is critical. And some mechanical treatments will be done to improve sagebrush recruitment. We want to also limit the negative effects of roads. So we have planned to reclaim unauthorized roads, which we get plenty of those. Wildlife fencing on Highway 189 on part of that property is occurring this summer. It's for the next UDOT project going from the state park to almost all the way to Rainbow Bay. And that will include wildlife fencing along the highway and escape ramps, which we will be locating in a few weeks. Highway crossing structure is also going in across from Maxby Hill to allow deer to cross the highway safely, underneath the highway safely. If anybody's been driven up there, they're putting that in right now.
Is that big giant culvert?
It's a lot like the culvert they put in adjacent to the Deer Creek State Park, which is very well used. So it's that design is proven to be effective. It's big. It should work really well. Also, we want to protect our winter ranges from wildfire by finding a fuel break or vegetated green strips along the highway corridor. The fires in the past have started from vehicles or cigarette butts. And if they start along the highway corridor, they get up on our property and cause problems. So that's one of the strategies we'll be using. So part of the plan, it's in an appendix in the back, is our access management plan. And basically, we want to give the public access to the property as long as it doesn't detract from the goals and objectives why we have the WMA. So the purpose of the access plan is basically to ensure public access and use done in a manner to assist the division in achieving the goals and objectives outlined in the Habitat Management Plan. And just to review, those goals and objectives are basically to preserve, enhance, protect, mitigate winter range and winter wildlife, reduce deprivation on the surrounding private lands. So if we can do that and still allow access, then we want to provide that access. Some of the problems we have with access issues are user-created roads and trails, which is pretty much everywhere. Everybody has an ATV and likes to drive it wherever they want. So keeping along existing roads and trails is a challenge. Vandalism, I thought San Bee County was the worst place for getting signs shot up, but I've changed my mind. It's actually Wasatch County. For some reason, I guess it's because the gun range is located on the north end of the property in Big Hollow. But man, my sign life is probably less than 2 weeks when I put signs up. That's a problem. Trash dumping related to shooting is a problem. Fire, just people starting fires by accident, that's a problem that we're worried about. Wildlife harassment and poaching, especially in the winter months, is always an issue. Habitat damage is something we're thinking about. So every access plan will have a map of the authorized roads and trails, and those will be the ones we'll manage. And the ones in red will be reclaimed and signed as closed. And typically, the roads on this property will be closed seasonally from December 1st to April 30th. And this access map will show the legalized routes, and we'll have these on kiosks at the entry points as soon as we get all the kiosks put up. I've got some of those up, and that hopefully will help inform the public where they should be going and give an idea where they are. Some of the other appendices in this plan, we have maps of the property, we have the deer and elk habitat maps, we got a detailed property description, acquisition history. There's a long acquisition history on this property. It goes back to the 40s. Access plan, as I talked about. We also have the Big Hollow Shooting Range agreement and operational plan, and an agreement with the Bureau of Reclamation. Bureau of Reclamation manages, they have a 1,500-acre piece of property that basically borders the reservoir and us. There's no fences here, so we've gotten together with the BOR and we'll manage this property and with our property. So that agreement is in that one of those appendices. So all that is included in the plan. With that, is there any questions?
I think I was reading in the packet about some land that you were trying to acquire and include it in that. Is that still in place, or are you trying to?
We've got some land from CITLA. We got it. So turn around and look at the list. We acquired some land from CITLA recently. Yeah, 1,092 acres. It kind of went through the middle part of here, so that's now division land.
So you did buy it, but
we kind of did a trade. There is still a section we'd like to get, section 16, I think it is. Where is it? I don't know which section. There's a section we'd like to get. I think it might be right here. The CITLA isn't willing to give up yet, so it's still on our list of we'd like to get if we can. But it is sort of developable, so that's why they don't want to give it up. But otherwise, the good thing is now we don't have that big piece of CITLA ground in the middle of the property. Now we kind of have a continuous piece, so that's really a good thing.
Dan, you got a question?
Yeah, Mark, I saw you, there was the word fish dropped a couple of times, but I don't see too much. If you get that property down on the south side, then that has a little bit more implication, but could you address the fish issue there?
I don't really have any fish on the property.
That's what I'm saying.
There's no water on the property. That's Unless you want to plant some fish in our county.
Oh, no, it just alluded to, you know, improving, you know, fishing opportunities or whatever. The property does reach Walford Creek there on the, you know, that one corner there by the reservoir, but and I think that is significant there, but I was just curious.
Yeah, so that's on the north side of the road, and it's adjacent to private land along the creek, so there really isn't access to water there on our property.
Yeah. I haven't had much luck getting from the Bureau of selling that piece of property by the lake, do you?
Well, we're managing the forum, but they're not. I don't think they're willing to give it to us. We'll take it.
What about sort of trade for barriers? Everything's negotiable.
I got a question. Were you involved with with UDOT, the process of the expansion of that road?
Yeah, we've been talking with UDOT for years. So as soon as they got to that project, we knew we needed a wildlife crossing.
Oh yeah.
And so we worked that in the project. They've been good to work, but that's right about here. Still on the highway.
It's sitting there right now.
It's just sitting right there. So we've been working with them on that and placing the escape ramps to get deer off the highway. If we get on the highway, we talk together with them on that. So we're working side by side with them on that.
So none of that area that's been developed with all those zip lines, none of that's part of this.
It's on the other side of the highway.
It's on the other side of the road.
And we did comment on that, and the only thing we can really do is comment on those things if they're going to have any wildlife impacts. So the only thing we were worried about is pretty much winter use of the zip line. This might disturb deer, but seasonal closure is only...
Because a lot of those deer migrate even over onto that kind of that... It's not an island, but it's kind of that big, big area there. And you know, I just noticed that in the construction of those zip lines, you know, they dug roads and they did a bunch of other stuff, and I just wanted to know if you had input on that.
Yeah, we did comment on that, but that doesn't necessarily mean we
sure
agree with
say.
Yeah.
We will have probably have some impacts, but hopefully minimal.
It's good to hear that UDOT's working with you. I noticed the little thing up by Parties, the signs that were put up.
Yeah, that's great.
About wildlife.
For 5 miles.
Yeah.
I hope that they work really hard on that. And I know that several years ago, even in Iraq, we were talking about that. And actually, in Arizona, I had a lawsuit filed against them because of the death, because they hit wildlife on the road. And so there were some issues there. But I'm sure that UDOT and everybody's aware of that. And hopefully it's a win situation for wildlife and for the public safety.
Yeah, it's just going to be a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it needs to be done.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the public?
Troy Jessenson, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. First, I'd like to commend you bringing this forward. You really hit something that we've been thinking about, you know, these past several years. Every year, the conservation groups, RMEF and others, we generate millions of dollars, which we spend on federal lands to do habitat projects. We've created a significant amount of forage that is not being beneficial to users and us as far as raising wildlife. These WMAs are actually a diamond in the rough. And I compliment the division. I'd also encourage you to look further into these WMAs. And I think we as conservation groups need to shift our funding into these WMAs. We don't have the loopholes and the red tape to go through to do these projects, and they're more beneficial to livestock users and to hunters. And so I would encourage the division in the future to look at inventory our WMAs and see what needs to be done and come forward to these conservation groups with these projects. And let's shift our funding from these federal grounds to grounds that are state-owned, that we can actually do something to make a difference. I applaud you. Thank you.
I'd yell for that. Sometimes it's hard to get funding just for...
Hey, you've got to commit, and I guarantee you Ron will be on board too with RMEF, that we'll shift our funding there.
Thank you. Well, I need the two safety routes back on this property.
Yeah,
there you
go.
It used to be a
we can arrange that.
No. There used to be a lake on this property right about here.
We'll vote the bills.
It's been 20 years since I've seen the birds on it.
We can put it back on.
We'll capture.
Okay, any other comments or questions? How about going back to the rack? Any comments, questions further on this? Okay, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion that we accept
the Wallsburg Wildlife Management Area plan as presented.
Christine? Okay. All in favor? And vote unanimous. I think we're done. Yeah, I want to tell all of the RAC members thank you for being here and taking the time to do this. It's important. I know sometimes we get a lot of guff about nothing ever happens and we don't make any difference, but we do. And it gives the public an opportunity to voice their opinions and we get to carry it forward. So thank you all.